Showtime. Let's do this.
IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Shooting Space, my lacrosse podcast where I talk to some awesome people within the game, talk about what's happening, talk about how we're doing, and all the good stuff in between. This is actually a re-recording session with our guest today, because even though I study technology, apparently technology does not agree with me, and the audio got a little muffled, but it's all good because we had tons of fun recording last time. We're just going to have more fun recording this time, and it's going to be great. I'm so excited to have Sarah Muller on the episode today. For those that don't know Sarah, she is awesome. She played at UMBC and has played at Stony Brook. And what's really interesting and why I wanted to have Sarah on the pod today and a week ago is she's actually going to be looking into taking a sixth year because of what's happening with COVID-19. Hope everyone is safe and sound. And the NCAA granting an extra year of eligibility to all the spring athletes. So Sarah, thank you so much for joining us, and please give us a little intro so people can get to know you.
Of course. Hi, I'm Sarah Muller. I am born and raised in Maryland. I went to St. Paul School for Girls for high school, and I was a three-sport varsity athlete there, playing soccer, lacrosse, and basketball. And then I committed to UMBC a little before my junior year, so it was pretty early for us because they didn't have the whole rule change. And then dealt with injuries at UMBC, didn't have the best time physically for me, and then decided to transfer to Stony Brook in Long Island to compete and play with the best people and just learn and grow myself and grow as a player. So I decided to go to Stony Brook and actually just finished with my master's in psychology. So now I'm officially a college graduate. But yeah, that's pretty much the story.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Yes, lots to talk about. Lots to talk about different turns and different things that have happened in your sports career. But yeah, super excited to have you here. So let's talk a little bit more about how you got into lacrosse. Obviously, as a fellow DMVer from Maryland, I'm from Maryland. You know, we know that lacrosse is kind of the sport, if not one of the two biggest sports that everyone pretty much plays. So how did you play or get into playing? When did you start? And, you know, how's that kind of influenced your game throughout?
I think being born and raised in Maryland, especially with lacrosse being the hotbed, I was pretty young. My dad actually bought us two men's fiddlesticks when we were younger. And we'd always just toss in the backyard. And my sister was never coordinated, so she was always frustrating to play with. But my dad and I would just pass with the lacrosse stick and lacrosse ball hours every day when I was younger. And then just kind of grew up playing club lacrosse with Skywalkers and going to St. Paul's and just being surrounded by lacrosse. And even growing up, like hearing about the Sandwicks, like growing up and hearing all about them was kind of cool being in Maryland and knowing some of them. And it's just crazy just growing up in the hotbed.
Definitely. Agreed. Lots of big names, really great athletes that, you know, are in our area. And we're so lucky that at all stages of the game, we've had really great athletes to look up to. You mentioned going to St. Paul's. So kind of what was that experience like? I'm assuming you also played club. So maybe give a shout out to your club team. But really, you know, going to St. Paul's, you played three varsity sports, which I want to say last time we talked were basketball, lacrosse, and soccer, maybe?
Yeah. Yep.
Memory serves me correct. You know, how did you balance that? One of the things that's been in conversation a lot is, oh, like, should athletes focus on one sport? Should they play multiple sports? So how did you balance? How did you make it work with three varsity sports?
Oh my gosh, it was crazy. Even growing up when I was younger, I would do dance. So I was doing dance and basketball during the same season. So I would go from dance class to basketball practice, and it was crazy. But going to St. Paul's, it helped me become, I think, well-rounded all around as an athlete and with game IQ, because all the sports are somehow connected, whether it's playing with a team or just having that IQ. It was just super important to always just stay active in my mind and being able to balance schoolwork and playing a sport year round, it's super important. And I think I personally matured from it.
Mm.
So I think that's super important for kids to play different sports.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Totally agree. I think, you know, I played field hockey and lacrosse, and both sports brought out different things. I knew I loved lacrosse and that was just what I wanted to do, but I was in shape during field hockey. That was shape. Like, I always knew spring I could outrun anyone, which was always fun. But like you said, you know, so many different skills that you can learn. And in terms of playing club and then focusing on lacrosse, so what made you decide lacrosse was the sport that you wanted to pursue past high school?
I was pretty torn between playing soccer and lacrosse in college. I was growing up playing on a club team as well, and for soccer, so I was kind of balancing which sport I wanted to play.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with lacrosse, like, I was one, better at it, and two, I felt like I could go further with mm-hmm. my career and job opportunities, because obviously soccer is like a huge sport all around the world, but it's not really known in other countries.
Right.
So I think it was important just helping grow the game, basically.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That's awesome. You know, having options and also taking the time to identify which option worked the best for you. Obviously, you know, you had the opportunity to go play Division I. So what was that process like? What made you pick UMBC? You know, obviously being close to home, to your family might have been a factor, but what was your recruiting process like?
It was pretty quick for me. There was like one tournament in the summer right before I graduated where like all these schools were contacting me, and you kind of, with me, I based everything off emotion. So I was like, oh, it's great to have this school look at me, but what about this other school? And just trying to balance everything and seeing what was right for me as a person was super important, and trying to find a place that I could call home for the next 3-4 years was vital for me. And I think being close to home was important, so my parents could go to every game. But I think with UMBC as a program, I wanted to help grow the name of UMBC, because we have the other big schools in Maryland, Loyola, Maryland, Hopkins,
right,
Towson, like they're all huge lacrosse schools. But I think with UMBC, like, we're kind of the underdogs in a way, but it was important to like make a name for them.
Yeah, that's awesome. So obviously, you know, you made a name for yourself, and were able to kind of find your niche while you were there, but you also faced some injuries. So let's talk about, you know, going into freshman year, what your emotions were like preparing to start playing in college, but then kind of facing that first adversity of an injury.
I was super excited going in, obviously freshman year, but it's kind of scary. And during the fall, I was playing through the fall and I was doing pretty well and got some playing time here and there. But then I had this nagging foot injury since high school, and I finally went to the team doctors and got it checked out, went through the MRI process, and I broke 2 bones in my foot. They only had to remove one, but I went through surgery my freshman year, was out the entire season, and it was just kind of devastating because I came in ready to go and then you get sidelined.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for me it was such a growing year, and like being able to watch my surroundings and everything and how the coaches coach and how people react to criticism or see who works well with certain people. I think being injured is kind of a blessing in disguise for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Especially your freshman year, because you really don't know what you're getting into, but being able to see it from an outside perspective is super important.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think that's an important point that you made about, you know, using that time that you're on the sideline to not only be a good teammate, but also kind of analyze the game, analyze how your team plays, start to get that understanding of, okay, this is how my team plays, this is what they do, and this is how I can fit myself into the system, and really start to kind of mold your mind to the structure of the team itself.
Right.
Definitely, definitely. So moving on to your sophomore year. So, you know, you started in 16, you appeared in all 17 games of the season. I had to have the bios out there because I love statistics. I love numbers. And you had a really, really great year. So, you know, I'm sure that must have been an amazing feeling to get that vindication, be back on the field and get to do your thing.
Absolutely. And I think being injured and like having that, like hunger that you need to come back, and being out obviously is unfortunate. It's not fun, but I think once you're ready to go and ready to train and be there mentally and physically is so important. And then being able to just play free and mm-hmm. make up for that year that I didn't have and show other people, hey, yeah, I was out all year, but I came back.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, and for those keeping tracks of the numbers at home, you know, she got selected to the America East All-Rookie Team, had 73 points. So, you know, obviously you were, like you said, seeking to kind of make up for that lost time and do your thing. So then looking into your third year at UMBC, you know, you were able to get out on the field again and play a really big chunk of games until you had another injury.
Yeah, that injury was the worst day of my life. It was kind of weird because I woke up that day. We were playing Vermont, and we were in team study hall in the hotel because we had, like, a later game.
Mm-hmm.
And I just looked at my roommates, and I was like, something doesn't feel right. Like, something – I hate to have that mindset, but something just does not sit right in my stomach right now. So we're going through warm-ups and everything, and I even had to take myself out because I was just like, I don't want to get hurt. I don't want someone else to get hurt. I just need to take a breath. So we're going, and it's like 10 minutes in the first half, and I had an 8-meter, and I was on like the first inside hash, so it was kind of awkward anyways, but I was going in, got too close to the crease, tried to avoid the goalie with like my stick in the crease and everything, shot, no contact, nothing, stepped weird, my knee popped, and then I just went straight down, and I knew right away that I tore something.
Mm-hmm. That's rough. I hate that. I hate when you have that feeling in your heart where you're like, something is not adding up. 1 + 1 does not equal 2 today, and I can't put my finger on it. And yeah, I mean, that's very tough. The kind of prevalence, or at least increase maybe in the, like, people putting out the numbers there that ACL tears, especially in female athletes, are seen more prevalent, or at least are being publicized more. It's such an interesting and crazy phenomenon. And you know, I commend all the amazing doctors and physical trainers and therapists that are doing amazing work to get our athletes back on the field. But, like, it's really scary because, I mean, I remember at Sewanee, we had one season where like, at least 4 or 5 people tore their ACL. And we did the prevention stuff. Like, we were doing prevention and was stretching, all this stuff. But it just, for some reason, like, I don't know what it was. Like, something was in the air and things were happening. And so, you know, I'm so sorry about your injury because obviously you were having a great year. And, you know, something that I was wondering was how were you able to kind of push through that, having been a year and a half removed from another injury and now going into an even more serious one that kind of had a long, like, you know, 8 months or so recovery road?
Right. I think with me, like, I was in denial for the first couple of days. And I was like, I'm fine, everything's good, like, it's just swollen, whatever. But when I got the MRI like, a couple of days later, it was torn. And then I think mentally was the hardest part all around, and just trying to go through it again. Mm-hmm. But I think having the right support and knowing what it feels like to be injured,
mm-hmm.
was super important in my situation, because I was in that situation before. Mm-hmm. I was on crutches for a long period of time. I was sitting out, but mm-hmm. was a little blessing in disguise that it was at the end of the season. I mean, it's prime time for playoffs and everything, but I got a good chunk of the season in, so I was really grateful to be able to actually play. But mm-hmm. I think mentally for me, it was super hard, but having teammates who have torn their ACLs in the past and having support with athletic trainers and physical therapists and great surgeons, it just made the process so much easier.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. So how long was your recovery process?
Honestly, I'm still going through it right now, but it took, I started running at like 6 months, which is late because I had a whole messed up knee, but it was about a full year to feel normal because I had to go through another surgery in November. Like, I got surgery May 22nd, played, had to get surgery November of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So going through that and being out for a couple of weeks, it's just never ending, but it took about a year.
Wow. Well, you made it, you fought through and you made it happen. So after your time at UMBC, and, you know, I know we touched on this a little bit when we recorded last, but I'll kind of let you bring it up again. You know, what made you want to make that change and go to Stony Brook?
I think it was just the wanting to win and when, like, wanting a ring and being pushed to my limits physically and mentally, and being coached by Coach Felina was a blessing, and being around big players and being coached by Kylie Ohlmiller and playing on the same team as Taryn and Allie Kennedy, it's so important to be in the same room and on the same team with those kind of people and having the winning mindset and that caliber.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I just tweeted about this. I said, you know, Stony Brook was one of the teams that had Lax Twitter going crazy. And I know you know this. And I guess we didn't really touch on our history, but we can get to that after all this. But, you know, just thinking of the way Stony Brook was, like, building up their program, building, and then bursting onto the scene, bursting onto our TVs, and as a fan living through that and seeing that, and I'm sure as a player, you know, and being able to later on go and be on their team now. I mean, that must be so crazy to go from, like, you know, just a team you maybe were admiring before and really admiring the structure and the players on the team to now being part of that team.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's unbelievable. And just being able to be part of it is great. And Coach Spolina and the other coaches taking a risk on me and me taking a risk on them is super important. And it just shows that, like, they didn't give up on me and I didn't give up on myself, especially after suffering injuries, but they were supportive with me through the whole process as well. Mm-hmm. It was great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, what was that transition like going from being close to home to now, you know, going to Stony Brook, being a little bit farther from home, not too far, but just a couple hours. And then, you know, kind of having to work your way into the lineup of a completely new team, learn a new system. And I believe you were a junior when you got there, or a senior?
Junior.
Yeah.
It was crazy. I was definitely nervous, especially being in the hotbed of Long Island lacrosse and going to a number one program at the time and just trying to fulfill what they fulfilled the year before about going to the Final Four, I think, and playing Boston and seeing how much grit they have inside themselves and how much they wanted to win after that. Just being surrounded by it.
Mm-hmm.
Personally is such a different experience than just seeing the magic happen and just being able to put in the work that we put in starting in the fall once we got there and then having it transition into the spring.
Mm-hmm.
It's mind-blowing.
Yeah, it's awesome. Absolutely. Yeah, that's such a crazy feeling of you know, like you said, you were chasing your dream and wanting to really pursue an even higher level of lacrosse, and you had the opportunity to do that. I think, you know, your story will resonate with so many people because injuries happen, and a lot of times we feel like the world has ended or our careers are over, or, you know, we'll never reach our goals. But you're a testament to, like, if you just stick to it and you keep playing, keep pushing hard, like, it will happen the way that you want it to happen, and doors will open even when you feel like none are opening. So you know, that's amazing. And what was it like being coached by Coach Spolina?
It was intense, but a good intense. He never put anyone in the situation to fail. So I think no matter how hard he was on us, he was like, if you work hard, it's going to pay off. So mm-hmm. I think with everyone buying in as well and just people realizing we're a top 10 program and we got here, especially this year, like I think this year we would have gone, excuse me, so far, but everyone bought in, and that's the biggest thing. And having people who want to win, especially Spolina, he hates to lose. He'll admit it till the day he dies. He hates to lose. It is the worst thing for him. And I think it was the worst thing for all of us as well. And just seeing how people bounce back from that is huge.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the things Kylie Ohlmiller and I talked about was just the values that he instilled in the team and the want to win and the want to be like, you know, we can get there. We can get where we want to be. You know, how does kind of that messaging and that belief from your coaches, and like you said, him not putting you in positions, you know, where you might fail, how does that contribute to the fire in you to want to succeed and kind of the belief in yourself to be able to just go in and do what you got to do?
I think even not for like myself, but for the whole team, like most of us weren't top 100 recruits. And I think, and he told us that every day, but he was like, if you work hard for a blue collar team, we work hard for what we get and mm-hmm. what we want.
Mm-hmm.
So I think once we have that mindset and have the coaching staff prepare us and help us, I think it's a huge sentiment to the program itself and to who they are as people, because they want us all to win and be happy and succeed.
Definitely. Definitely. And, you know, being a transfer as well, you know, did you feel – apprehensive before coming in? Like, were you nervous? Obviously, you were able to get playing time and contribute to the team. So even more so to that, you know, what was kind of his messaging of, you know, your transfer coming in, but we want you to feel comfortable and feel like you can really be part of the team?
I think the first week, it was weird because I was always introduced myself as, oh, yeah, I'm the transfer, blah, blah, blah. But then he called me one day. He was like, Moeller, like, you're not a transfer anymore. Like, you're part of the team. Like, stop introducing yourself like that. And I was like, all right, you're right. So I think the fact that he brought me in right away and accepted me right away, and so did the other girls, it was definitely harder because I was the Maryland kid, like, pretty laid back, like, not as high paced as everyone up in Long Island. But I think they, I don't know, it's like, it's very different up there, but in a good way. But the fact that everyone accepted me and welcomed me and supported me was super important.
Definitely. That's awesome. I love that. Love a good, happy atmosphere that fosters success. And so looking into, you know, this past season and really what could have been slash maybe should, I don't know how you're feeling, been your last season, you know, what was your mindset coming into this season at Stony Brook?
It was bittersweet because I knew it was my last year at the time. I knew, even with Allie Kennedy saying you have to play like it's your last game or practice, and respecting the seniors and our mindset. And I think our underclassmen really enjoyed our upperclassmen and respected us. So I think having their support as well as pushing us every day in practice, like, was huge. If it weren't for the entire team, we would not have been as successful.
Right.
Beating Syracuse, like, all these freshmen going in and killing it while they're out there, it's huge. But yeah, I think I hate your question. I could just keep rambling, but
it's all good. That's all I do anyway on these podcasts, honestly. So y'all keep me in check. I'm the one that just goes off on tangents. No, I think that definitely answers it. And, you know, what I'm curious about is kind of what happened, right? Like, how did you find out about the season ending? What were the emotions? And then, you know, kind of shifting to, did you take a moment to pause, or were you immediately like, well, you know, what's going to happen to my year that I have left?
What was it? It was like the week where everything was kind of going downhill. We were supposed to play USC. We were supposed to fly out to USC on a Wednesday, I think, play them on a Saturday. And then it was either Monday or Tuesday, we found out that we weren't traveling anymore. Mm-hmm. So we're like, okay, well, we'll reschedule this, whatever. And then the next day, our athletic director gathered everybody into the arena, and then he was talking basically about how Stony Brook's going to stay open, like, we'll do everything we can for the safety, but still keep playing sports. Great. And then all of a sudden, this guy kind of stood up and was like, ESPN or NCAA just canceled everything. And I looked back at my academic advisor, and it was a blessing that a majority of our teammates were there. All the seniors were, but Coach Spallina and all the seniors started crying, and it just wasn't ideal for us. But then he gathered all the seniors down to the floor, and we just kind of stood there in silence, and all of us started crying, and no one really said anything, but it was good because he was able to make us laugh, especially in a time like that. But we just kind of gathered together. It was quiet, got our tears out, and then moved on.
Definitely. That's tough. That's tough. That's real time. That's real time right there. I can't imagine, you know, especially being around your teammates. And like you said, you know, we're all pumped and getting ready for or entering a really, really great season, you know, having just played a handful of games. So, after the news, and I'm sure, you know, going back home, kind of settling in, when did you start thinking about your sixth year? And then what processes did you have to take to, you know, confirm that you are able to take that sixth year? And then what process did you start to take to see, you know, where you'll be next year?
Right away. Right when we heard that the season was ended, I was like, I want to take it. And my situation is kind of different too, because I already had my red shirt. So I was afraid that they were going to say, like, oh, well, only like true seniors can take it or come up with something. But obviously I had so many emotions and thoughts running through my head at the time. And it was just hectic for me, like in my own head. But I think once I had to get like the NCAA regulations and the rules down and trying to figure out, okay, do I graduate and move on? Do I graduate and stay? Like trying to put the pieces together and figure out what I wanted to do for my future, my life was super important. But I just knew I wanted to play. Mm-hmm. And because I got injured again when we played Florida, I was coming up the top of the eight and just went through a double team, which I should not have done, and got tripped up and landed on my hand. Mm-hmm. So I broke my hand, and then I was out for two more games, and then our season was done.
No.
So I think, I know. But I think just coming back from that, like, I couldn't end the way I personally ended. And mm-hmm. I can be selfish, and I want to be selfish with this situation because I just didn't like that feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's awesome that you're able to get your year. You know, the concern that you mentioned about already having a red shirt, I think, you know, it's great that that wasn't even a thought for them, or an exception for them of, oh, no, like we're only going to allow these kinds of seniors, but not these other kinds of seniors. And so thinking through kind of where you want to be, dreams that you're chasing, how you want to really like tie the bow on your college lacrosse career, you know, what did you have in mind as you considered the institutions that you wanted to be at? You know, how do you envision your last year of lacrosse going?
Just like playing like I used to, and just having fun as well, but as well as trying to figure out my life personally, because yes, I majored in psychology, but it's not what I want to do with my life. Mm-hmm. They're just trying to figure out what the best route is for me, whether it is staying or leaving. I'm unsure yet, but I think it's going to be important for me to make my decision to think about my life and whether I want to coach afterwards or be a GA somewhere. I don't know, but I think just trying to figure out for me for the future is super important.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, thankfully we have this time at home to do some reflections. And, you know, I think obviously as your story and kind of your journey shows, like no matter where you end up, I know you'll make the most of the opportunity and succeed, and we'll tweet about it and we'll like the tweets and reply and all the things because that's just how we are. But no, I'm so excited for you. And, you know, what's crazy is Sarah and I have followed each other on Twitter and Instagram for years, like since high school, y'all. High school, which was a hot so
literally high school.
And it's just crazy to think like we've gone through all these things, you know, through college, through playing college and life. And it's just, it's such a joy, and it brings me so much happiness that I've been able to cultivate relationships with people through social media and then through lacrosse Twitter, hashtag Lax Twitter. And it just, you know, sometimes I forget that there's 18,000 people out there who maybe read my tweets or follow me or whatever, because in my mind, I'm still the same person that had 100 followers in high school that you were tweeting back and forth with. Like, that hasn't changed for me, but I love it. I love seeing where we all kind of end up and where we're going.
Same, and seeing the connections that you've made along the road, and the fact that we still keep in contact, whether we don't talk every day or whatever, it doesn't matter. Like, you're here at the end of the day, and I think it's important to, again, have those connections and know those people that will support you.
Absolutely.
In cases like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, what are the odds that I would have a podcast and you would have a sixth year? Who would have thunk it? Who
would have thunk it? Not me.
Well, you know, so as we kind of wrap up the pod, a lot of different conversations that I've had, and the other podcast that is in the podcast grade right now is with Amanda Mastera, who works with World Lacrosse. But one of the things I'm really, really interested in is kind of the future of the women's game. And, you know, you've obviously played lacrosse for a really long time, but you've also probably played through a couple of influential changes in the college game, because I'm assuming you played before self-start and after self-start, before shot clock and after shot clock, right? So how have you seen the game kind of change and transition? And then what do you see for the game moving forward, for the women's game?
Yeah, even just like the stoppage of play, I was around when there were more girls on the circle and there was free movement and girls could get off the restraining line and have a dog-eat-dog match on the circle, but right. I think it's super important to obviously stay safe while playing, but as well as just switching it up and just whether it's changing the pace and going back to the Olympic styles and making the field shorter or just taking or keeping the same length of the field and all that, but taking a girl off, like having one less attacker and defender on both sides and seeing how that plays out, whether it's going to help with spacing or who know, or the pace of the game. Literally, who knows what could happen with one little rule change, but I think it's important to figure it out and just maybe change it in a couple years.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, definitely. Yeah, I'm so curious. I think usually I'm stubborn, and you know, you've seen my progression from being super stubborn lacrosse fan to being still super stubborn, but maybe with some consideration for rule changes. But the adjustment for the Olympics is something I'm really, really curious about. And the size of the field and the different kinds of athletes, right? So we're going from kind of our more structured, typical lacrosse game to now having, you know, the run and gun, like everyone's just running. And I think it gives a chance for different athletes to show their capabilities. You know, Amanda made a great analogy to this. It was like kind of, like with rugby, like the rugby sevens athletes aren't the same athletes that compete in other versions of rugby most of the time. It's just like different people catering to different versions of the game. And I'd be really curious to see that for lacrosse. So definitely something.
Me too, because I'm a terrible defender, but I wonder if they change the rules, if it would make me a better defender. So who knows? And maybe I am a good defender and end up running midfield. Who knows?
Yeah, that's a great consideration because I didn't even think of that because I'm a horrible defender. Horrible. One of my earliest college lacrosse memories when I knew it was going to be a ride was I was on defense. Oh, why was I on defense? On defense and just feeling real positive. And then one of my teammates just like, I don't know how to say it without using colloquial terms, like got my neck. Like she ankle broken, everything, neck gone. Like I just, I still picked it in my head. It was a mess. It was, and I know everyone was just like, "Oh, well,
she's down." Yeah. Medic,
she's down. Exactly, she's down. But no, I mean, it's all good. And like I said, very excited to see where the game goes. So, you know, if there are young players out there that are listening right now that maybe are, you know, facing injury or feeling discouraged with kind of the climate, having their seasons canceled, you know, what words of advice would you give them?
I think especially for the injured girls during this time, just focus on getting better. And then with the girls that are trying to get recruited or trying to further their skills, it's important to just stay positive and just, again, find those connections with whether it's workouts, whether it's keeping contact with your coaches about situations that you're in or anything. I think not being afraid to reach out and ask for help or advice during this time is super important. And just don't give up hope. Obviously, things are getting better, I hope, all around the U.S. with COVID, and things are looking more positive. But I think just staying positive and confident and just keep working hard and work out and don't say, oh, I'll get in shape in a month. Like, no, just keep working hard because how you come out of this pandemic, whether you're stronger mentally or physically, it's going to be very important.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I've loved on social media and you have been doing this as well is just seeing athletes continuously working out, whether it be, you know, going for a run or finding a spot to play wall ball at a distance, just kind of keeping morale up and keeping their skills up because the day will come when we're allowed to play again. You know, I probably haven't been doing a great job of that, but I do go running. I think that running is not my favorite thing, but it's become something that I'm enjoying doing because it's given me an opportunity to be outside. And I know that, you know, when I'm able to go play again on the turf, like I want to be ready and I want to be fit and in shape. And something else I'd love to get your thoughts on too. These are kind of all my like little quarantine thoughts that I had in my notes, but one of the big topics was, you know, recruiting. So a lot of, or maybe a handful, there's some back and forth, but, you know, a handful of tournaments are also being canceled because of COVID. And a lot of players are kind of freaking out and panicking about, you know, getting recruited, being seen by coaches. So would you have any advice for those players that are really trying to elevate their lacrosse careers while going through this time that we're in?
I think coming from like a coaching perspective for my club team and just seeing them, like as players and people, it's just stay positive. And I know I keep reiterating that, but it's so important because nothing's in our control right now. So I think control the controllables. Again, keep working out, stay in contact with your club coaches. Mm. Don't be afraid to send in film and just have a sense of grit inside of you, because once this is over, everyone's going to, one, probably play better, become better athletes and people. And I think just knowing that there is an end to this, and I like what you said previous, you said we will play again. And I think that's so important to keep that in mind for younger girls, especially when they're trying to get recruited and go play somewhere, that we will play again. But it's just important to stay connected with important people.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, social media is, you know, I think we're a great example of the connections that you can make. And we have so much information at our fingertips. We have the emails, we have YouTube, you can post your highlight tape, you know, use this time to really put yourself in a great position to be seen. So definitely concur with all of that. And yeah, no, we will play again. And I'm ready. I'm excited. This is Georgia Heat on the turf. I will be there present, excited to be there with my water jug. But yeah, it'll be all good. It'll be all good.
It will.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much for joining me today on the pod and bearing with me. I think this is the one. I have a good feeling about this, knock on wood. But, you know, like I said, best of luck with your journey. And I'm so excited to continue cheering you on and see all that happens for you next year and beyond.
For sure. Thank you for your support, too. It's fun to do this and stay connected, especially during this time. And you hearing my story, especially from my mouth and not through just text and social media. Cool to finally experience this.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.